Good evening. If you would be turning to 2 Kings chapter 5, that's where we're going to be starting at on tonight's lesson. Well, I was looking for a lesson idea for tonight, and a favorite story of mine from 2 Kings is the story of Naaman. And I like lessons like Naaman because they're lessons that almost anybody who has grown up in a Christian household or has gone to church, anyone from the ages of probably 7 on to adults know this story. Know of Naaman, who was this great warrior for a king that was an enemy king of Israel. He had leprosy, and he goes and sees Elisha, who heals him by having him dunk 7 times in the Jordan. And yes, it is a great lesson, but oftentimes I feel like there are some almost minor points that get overlooked that aren't really considered, in my opinion, minor points. And I'm broken down the lesson of Naaman into 3 parts because I want to analyze that there are really 3 key points to the overall story. So if you'll be reading with me in 2 Kings chapter 5, 1 through 6. Now, Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy." Now here is the beginning part of this story. We have Naaman, this valiant warrior whom God has granted victories over Israel, over Samaria. Because remember, at this time the Israelites are in a mess. Idolatry, they have turned into a wicked people, and as a result, God has basically given them into the hands of their enemies. And though Naaman is one of what I would consider main characters of the story, I mean, most of the time, if the chapter has a heading, it says Naaman is cured of leprosy. The character that I want to talk about tonight is one whose age and name isn't even given. It's the young servant girl from Israel. But before I focus on her, I want to talk about 3 ways that we can live our lives in difficult situations. Everyone in this room has either been in a tough situation or maybe facing a tough situation. We have our ups and downs in life. But there are really three main ways that you can live your life. And I have some of them here today I'd like to discuss. First one I want to talk about is the word resentment. Resentment means a bitterness or bitter feeling that you have towards someone or something that you may have felt has mistreated you unfairly. And sometimes that resentment comes from a very real thing. You may have really had someone mistreat you. You may have went to go buy a car that the owner said was like new. And his definition of like new was 200,000 miles and a flat tire. You might have some bitterness, but sometimes we may feel bitterness or resentment towards someone who really did not mean to slight us. Resentment is something that everyone has felt at some time, but it's not a way to live your life constantly. A resentful person doesn't seek to better themselves. They wallow in agony and self-loathing and oftentimes bring those around them down to their level. Let's look at some examples of resentment in the Bible, shall we? Turn with me to Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. Then all of the Israelites left Elim. They reached the western Sinai desert between Elim and Mount Sinai on the 15th day of the 2nd month after leaving Egypt. Then the whole community of Israelites began complaining again. They complained to Moses and Aaron in the desert. They said, "It would have been better if the Lord had just killed us in the land of Egypt. At least there we had plenty to eat. We had all the food we needed, but now you have brought us out here into this desert to make us all die from hunger. Wow, that is not a way to show appreciation to the God and the person who God sent to bring you out of slavery. And it's not like these people haven't been thankful to God before. I mean, without the plagues and without him guiding them to where they were, they wouldn't have made it this far. And yet, the Israelites have a record of not thanks, but of resentment. Here they are resenting the very God that brought them out of the bondage of slave labor, promising them land in Canaan, and yet all they can do is complain. They could have handled this in a better way. Yes, they were hungry, but they could have gone to Moses and Aaron and simply asked, would you pray to God for him to help us? Not have this bitter retort of, God should have just left us behind or just killed us there in Egypt. Why did he take us out to the desert to die? And of course, God takes pity on the people and sends manna from heaven. But as we'll see later in Numbers 11, 1 through 15, you'd think they would have learned to stop complaining by now. But no. Numbers 11, 1 through 15. Now the people complained about their hardships again in the hearing of the Lord. And when he had heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So that place was called Taberah because fire from the Lord had burned among them. And you would think by now, they would have learned, we ought not to complain. We ought to be grateful for what the Lord has done for us. But oh no, in the very direct next verse, the rabble that was with them began to crave other food. And once again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. They're resenting a miracle from God. This manna is not a natural occurrence. This is something God has sent them for them to live on, and they're not happy with this. Well, we'd rather have the food they gave us as slaves in Egypt. And then towards the end, they even get poor Moses. Moses asks the Lord, why have you sent me these people to care for? I'm not their mother. I'm not their father. They complain against you and against me. I would rather you kill me here and now than have to deal with them. Moses even begins towards the end resenting God because the people are driving him insane from their complaining. If you're a resentful person, you bring no productivity to a team. Your life is bitter, and you are even beginning to affect the people around you. We should never live a life of bitterness. It should be, if it ever happens, a short term, not a long term. Okay, so maybe you're not resentful, though. There's another way that you can live your life, and that's a life of complacency. Complacency is a feeling of smugness on one's work, even if the work is not the best. A complacent person will do the job that they think they've done the best of their ability, but really they're just doing the bare minimum to get by. If you were to ever go into a store and find a worker stocking a shelf and you were to ask them where an item was and they looked at you and said, I just get paid to stock, and then turn around and start stocking, they've done their job. On paper, their goal is to stock a shelf, but they're just doing the bare minimum to get by. And really, you'd think, well, is there anything wrong with that? You're comfortable where you are. Should you not just do the bare minimum? I mean, what's the point of doing the extra work? God has a lot to say on complacency also. In Revelation 3, 14 through 16, he says to the church of Laodicea, and to the angel of the church in Laodicea, write, the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of God's creation. I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. Would that you were either cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. So God is saying, I would rather this church either be having a burning passion for the Lord, or just not have no interest at all, but because you just do the bare minimum. You are a church in name only. You are a Christian in name only. I will spit you out of my mouth and you will be lost unless you change your ways. And over in Amos chapter 6 verse 1, woe to you who are complacent in Zion, and to you who feel secure on Mount Samaria, you notable men of the foremost nation, to whom the people of Israel come. Amos is warning the Israelites. They have gotten complacent. They are, no matter how many prophets God has sent them of the coming destruction of Israel, they have gotten to the point where they believe, honestly, simply because we are God's chosen people, God won't really wipe us out. I mean, after all, we are his chosen people. We have this covenant with him that we choose not to follow, but we are his chosen people. Complacency can be a very dangerous thing. As Christians, it's never good to be satisfied with where you're at. We are to seek growth in God. If you do not grow, you begin to recede. One cannot say they practice a talent and be a master of it if they don't use their gift, if they don't use their talent. As Christians, we should practice. We should study more. Don't let complacency take over your life. Lastly, though, let's talk about commitment. And this is the contentment. And this is how we should hopefully be living our lives. Contentment is a state of true happiness in life. It's not saying that you are in the greatest moment of your life, but that you can find happiness in just about any situation. You may say to yourself, how can that be? How can I be going through a rough patch in life and still be content? Surely you don't know what I've gone through. I may not, but compared to someone like Paul, a person who had every right to be resentful to God, instead he turns what could have been resentment into boasting in his suffering. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 24 through 29, Paul gives an account, not a derogatory account where he's saying, look guys, I've been a Christian and look what it's cost me. It's a, look what I have suffered for in the Lord, and I am grateful for it. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was pelted with stones. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in the danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak, and do I not feel weak? Who is led into sin, and I do not inwardly burn? At the end of all of these sufferings that Paul has gone through, he boils down, ultimately, though, the one thing he is most concerned with is not his own life, but the concern of the churches. He's more concerned with the health of the churches than himself. So how can someone who has been shipwrecked countless times, been in danger of people all around him, how could he be happy in the situations he finds himself? Paul gives the key to contentment, though, in Philippians chapter 4, 10 through 13. I rejoiced greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And of course, the him he's referring to is Christ. Paul lays out the ultimate key to contentment. Christ. You may face trials. You may be in a place in life that you don't want to be, and it seems like an awful dark place. But there is always a silver lining, and that is Jesus. So then, what does this have to do with a little servant girl? Imagine, if you will, for a moment. You might be anywhere from 7 to 8. living your life without a care in the world, a loving mother, a loving father, when suddenly raiders show up and you don't know if they've killed your mom or dad. You don't know where they're taking you, but they have grabbed this young girl from her homeland of Israel, taken her to a land that she may not know the language of the people, not know what they want her to do, and she's forced into a life of servitude at a young age, younger than probably most of the kids in this room. And she could have chosen to live her life in one of three ways. She could have resented being a slave. She could have made it miserable for Naaman's wife, for her to even be her slave. And when she hears that her wife's husband is being eaten up with leprosy, she could have just taken joy in this. She could have resented Naaman and found joy in his suffering. She could have been complacent. Well, I'm a servant. I'm going to scrub the floor. I'm going to do what's needed. But why should I have to mention to my master about the prophet in Samaria that could heal him? That's nothing to concern me. I'm just a servant here. But instead, this little girl finds contentment in her life. Doesn't explicitly state it in the verses, but in the fact that Naaman's wife takes the little girl's word at face value means that this little girl earned her reputation as probably a faithful servant, a content servant, who was more concerned with her master's husband's well-being than her own. Because she tells him that there is a prophet in Israel that can heal him. Except to tell this to basically the commander of the king's army is to admit to them, look, your gods are of no help to him. But there is a prophet in Israel, of the God of Israel, who will help him. This is putting her head on the line. I mean, you're essentially telling the king's right-hand man that their God is a phony. She could have been put to death for this. But even the king takes her advice from Naaman and is more than happy to send Naaman on his way. This little girl, I believe, was put there for God to send a message. And she lived her life contently. And this is, as Christians, is what we ought to do. And no matter what situation you find yourself, whether in a dark spot or in a spot filled with light, in a low spot or a high spot, if someone can't see your light of Christ shining through, you might need to question yourself. So I ask you this tonight. Do you resent God? Do you ever find yourself in a dark place where you want to blame someone and there's no one around for you to blame but either yourself or him? I'm going to tell you, that's a dangerous thing to say. How can you blame him when he sent his son for your salvation? I don't believe a God who would take joy in causing you pain would never send his own son. That sounds like something he would never do. So be very careful with resentment. But I understand. It happens. We get into dark places, but do not let that resentment consume you. Or do you find yourself growing complacent? I've read enough of the Bible. I've gone into enough Bible studies. I understand it well enough. How often do you pick up your Bible and read? Because I will tell you, you could read the same chapter many, many times and always find something new there you didn't pick up the first 6 or 7 times. Don't get complacent with Christ's word. We have it for a reason. It's our weapon in today's society. And like a weapon, if it gets dulled, you need to sharpen it by reading. The weapon is not the book itself. It's the words. And the words don't do much unless they are studied. So you need to sharpen this as well as this. But are you content, though? Could someone who doesn't know Christ and yet knows that you are a Christian, can they see Christ in you no matter the circumstance? Can they see it through either thought, action, or deed? So I'll tell you, I couldn't imagine being content to lose my deity, to be stripped of all power, to come here as a normal man, to know what was going to happen to me. and be crucified on a cross for people whose lives haven't even been born yet, but you know that man inwardly sins, and you're content with all of your action? I know I couldn't do it, but Jesus did. He was content in all things that he did up until the very end. So if you're here tonight and you feel like maybe you haven't been living a content life and you've started to backpedal into a life of complacency or maybe resentment, or if you don't have the keys to contentment yet, if you haven't gotten to know Christ, if you haven't come forward and confessed and repented and been baptized in remission of sins, then you still need the keys to contentment. Contentment does not come from a worldly life. It comes from knowing Christ. But if you need prayers of the congregation, or if you would like to have these keys to contentment, please come forward while we stand and sing the song of invitation.